Yes, ma'am. Now it will work, it seems.
Working?
Yes, ma'am. It started working.
Okay.
Hare Krishna.
So I wanted to start by one question a devotee sent me. Very interesting question. That about physics and consciousness. And he says, suppose we postulate that all the forces in the universe are bipolar, means they have two opposite meanings. Each force has its opposite force. And two, there can only be two types of bipolar forces. Those which attract unlike poles and repel the poles and repel like poles, and those which attract the like poles and repel the unlike. So just like in electromagnetic charges, positive charge attracts the negative charge. Electron attracts the positron. So this is unlike poles attract. And like poles are repelled, so two electrons will repel each other, or two protons will repel each other. But is it possible to have attraction where the two negative charges, not charges, but two negative poles are attracted to one another and the unlike poles are repelled? So he says in the electromagnetic force, the category one, where we look for the, whereas when we look for the two category of force, which attract the like poles and repel the unlike, we find that gravity is the only one pole of the category two type of force. Because the reason why that he's saying that is because matter of two bodies will attract each other. Both have the same form of substance, matter. Is not either positive or negative, yet they attract each other. They're alike, and yet they attract each other. That's called gravity. Naturally, the other pole of the second category of force, as our experience says, is consciousness. So let's see what he says here. If consciousness simply repels the gravity pole, i.e. the unlike pole, all manifestations of consciousness reflect repulsion to gravity. Somebody's microphone is going on. All right. Namely, we recognize anything living by virtue of its property to go against gravity. This is so deep-rooted criterion of distinguishing life from matter that ancient people of different cultures considered all such natural things which tend to move against gravity, such as fire and winds, as living demigods. All our efforts to have always been to assume freedom from the limits of gravity. The whole evolution can be understood to have followed this psychological distinction. This line of thinking may potentially link the relativity of the quantum mechanics. It can also help understanding weak and strong nuclear forces, and thereby connect gravity with the category of force, i.e. electromagnetics. The force of type 2, which possesses gravity as one pole and consciousness as the other pole, may be called contragravity force, and the field as contragravity field. We can call it Maya. It's all a very complex question he's asking here. But basically we have to understand that in the philosophical understanding and scientific understanding of matter and gravity, that according to Einstein, gravity arises from the particular nature of the space-time coordinate system. That are called warp, the space-time warp, Einstein called it. According to Einstein? What is this?
Microphone is coming, Maharaj. Someone can mute the microphone. Hare Krishna? I think Kajal Prabhu. Can you mute your microphone?
Okay, now okay.
Can you mute you? Okay. Can you mute your microphone? Hare Krishna? Okay.
Hare Krishna.
No, not yet. You mute your microphone.
A mute?
Yes.
Okay.
Echo is coming from yours. Hare Krishna?
Prabhu?
Hare Krishna? Yes. Now it is okay. Yes, Maharaj.
Alright. So according to Einstein, the a force of gravity is generated by the space-time warp. This means it's a geometrical, basically a geometrical phenomenon, that the mass tends to move in certain minimized areas of space. According to the way the space is formed, matter will move, and that is called what this physicist called gravity, what Newton called gravity. It's not really a force in that sense, but it's some type of geometrical phenomenon. Of course, that's geometrical not in a three-dimensional sense, but in four dimensions, which includes time. So it's very complex. The way Einstein explained it is not very intuitive, actually. Newton explained it in a more intuitive way. We see the apple fall, so there must be some force pulling the apple to the earth. Anyhow, to explain the opposing force to gravity, then, is something that we have to consider may not be a force, according to Einstein's theory. What would that be? I don't know. Huh? Einstein doesn't explain what that other opposing force would be, how we could understand anything opposed to that space-time warp. So, consider gravity a force is the first problem. Whether that would be considered a bipolar force, that's the next problem. Anyhow, from the point of view of matter and consciousness, there is more than a bipolar force manifest in that situation. First of all, according to the philosophers Kant and Hegel, for instance, they found that matter consists of two properties. One is cohesive property, and one is dispersive property. That this cohesive property of matter means that matter tends to consolidate itself, consolidate into one.
But it's
place.
Attraction between the same type of objects.
Yes. Like. Yes. So matter tends to cohesively attain a state in one place. Just like in the ancient days, the Aristotle and others considered that matter was the densest element. Even in Vedic literature, we know that matter is the very densest of all the elements.
Because it's so dense,
because it's so dense, then everything tends to fall into that. The dense matter tends to fall. Tends to fall down. So Aristotle and others consider the Earth the center of the universe because it's the densest substance. And as there are different substances in the universe, the Earth being the densest, then this Earth planet was considered the densest point. And things tended to fall there into the Earth. So Earth was, in the geocentric theory of the universe, was not a very exalted position. It was actually considered the lowest position, the grossest position. Anyhow, that's one thing. Then the other thing is, why is matter dispersed throughout the universe? In other words, it's not all sitting in one place. That Earth is existing in all the different places, according to the modern scientists. That the heavenly planets and so forth are not made of lighter elements. They're made of the same Earth as this planet is, as our planet is. So that means that there's a dispersion of matter and a tendency for matter to come into one place. So the attraction of matter for one another, that is called gravity, and the dispersion of matter throughout the universe, that is another force that is called repulsion, according to the philosophers.
But it is not recognized in modern science yet.
No. So matter is has a dispersive side and a collective side. a unifying side. So that that dispersive side, the repulsive side, is not known by science, but they have to admit it's there. Otherwise, how did matter get spread throughout the universe? If gravitational force is this unifying force of matter is present, then how is it that matter got dispersed throughout the universe? Because we see, according to the scientists' understanding, there's matter all over the place, and they're separated. Those bodies of matter are separated by space. That means that matter is not... there's two opposing forces. One is the gravitational, the other is the dispersal force. Dispersive force.
There's so countering force to gravity force, Maharaj, that is.
Yes. So attracting and repelling forces there in matter must be. So philosophers, by logical thinking, have concluded that if there's attractive force, there must also be repulsive force. Anyhow, that has to do with matter. That's all there. Matter has these two forces because logic of the logical proposition that wherever there's attraction, there must also be repulsion. Otherwise, how can it be retraction? Retraction means that these two things must be separated. Then attraction can occur, can be talked about. So if attraction can be talked about, then separation must also be there. So that separation is caused by what? You see? So logically, there must be, if there's attraction, there must also be repulsion. Both must be considered. That's a logical proposition, and the philosophers have dealt with that. So already there's a repulsive force in the universe, but the scientists simply refuse to talk about it. Huh? But logically, it must be there. Anyhow, that has to do with matter. Matter and its opposite, that all is a material consideration. When we get to consciousness, we can't talk about the opposition to matter, to material gravity. That would equate consciousness with matter. Consciousness is not equated with matter. Matter has its own opposition, which is another material principle. When we bring in consciousness, we're entering another field beyond matter. Because matter has no consciousness associated with it. So consciousness is a non-material principle. So then we want to ask the question, why, when consciousness is present, it seems to violate the laws of matter? In other words, a conscious body, a body with consciousness in it, can get up, defy the laws of gravity, stand up, and move around. Now, material bodies don't do that.
Spontaneity is not there, Maharaj.
Huh?
Spontaneity is not there.
Yes. Bodies with consciousness can get up, can move around, defying the laws of gravity. They can grow, a tree can grow very tall into the air, defying the laws of gravity. The man can stand up, defying the laws of gravity. All these things are there. But not only standing up high, he can also move around. Material bodies don't spontaneously get up and move. Only a body with a consciousness does that. Then here we have an indication that there's something that's opposing the material aspect. That consciousness is opposed to the material aspect. It's not an opposing force, but it's something totally outside of the domain of material activities. So what is that? How do we understand that? So matter is called, in philosophy, it's called substance. It's a substantial element. And substance has the characteristic of called necessity or law. Necessity means that things happen because of some external imposition on them. Necessity means... You have to turn off your microphone, please, so if you're going to talk. Then matter... Hello? Who's talking?
Maharaj, somebody was talking.
So matter has... matter is substance, and it has necessity controlling its behavior. So necessity means laws, and the laws are there because some external considerations have to be applied when we talk of substance or matter. External circumstance means that there's some cause has to push matter in order for it to move or do anything. So that cause comes outside of matter. Therefore, the realm of matter is called externality. Whatever happens, whatever's going on in the realm of matter requires a cause and effect. And the cause doesn't come from itself, it comes from outside itself. That's called material or substantial realm. And that realm is characterized by necessity because it's all externally imposed upon matter. And that necessity or law. Law means that people are controlled. When we talk about law, we mean people are controlled by an authority outside themselves that they must follow. So that's law. That's actually the principle of matter or substance. Now, when we talk of consciousness, we're not talking about the plane of necessity. Consciousness is the plane of free will and spontaneity. And consciousness is the cause of itself. A living entity decides for himself that he wants to get up and move from one place to another. He doesn't have to have any external cause for that. Of course, he may also have an external cause. He may be sitting in one place and it's too cold or it's too hot and he decides, oh, I want to get up out of this place and go another place where I can be more comfortable. That's maybe the external cause is there, but it's not really the external cause that causes him to move. It is his own decision, his own determination, self-determination, that makes him get up. No, I don't like this place, and then he goes to another. So that is the movement is caused by freedom, not by the external circumstances. His freedom to move allows him to move. That means that he is causing himself to do whatever he's doing. So that kind of internal cause is opposed to the external cause of substance, and that internal cause is called freedom, free will. So that's why the consciousness, when consciousness is present, the material sphere can be violated. The necessity of the material nature can be violated to some degree. Just like you may have free will, but it doesn't mean you can walk off the mountain and not fall due to the law of gravity. The body you have is made of matter, therefore it must observe, must be bound to the laws of matter, to the necessity of matter. Still, within the body, there is the soul, the consciousness, and that has some control over the body also. And it's possible by yogic practice even to make the body fly. Of course, we see that happening in the airplane. An airplane is material energy, yet the intelligence aerodynamic engineers can make that body fly, defying the law of gravity. So the body is like a coat, material coat upon the spiritual soul. But the body has to follow the laws of material nature unless the intelligence of the consciousness of the living entity determines otherwise. By special arrangement, then he can make even the material body violate the ordinary laws of material nature. And we see that simply in getting up and walking. Simply by getting up from a particular place and walking to another place, the matter of the body is violating the laws of material nature. That gravitational law. And also the cause-effect law of external cause. That's Newton's laws. Every force, something will move only if it's affected by an external force. So the body is not, when the body moves, it's not affected by any external force except its own self, internal force, and therefore moves. This is very interesting. Anyhow, the point is that to understand how the body and the consciousness are not opposed forces, but they are the difference of, what would you say? Matter and non-matter. That's why it's causing the difference there. Any question?
I send a question, Maharaj, here on the chat of the Sangha under the name Gauranga Pramananda.
Maharaj, like, what? You know, matter, actually, you know, like, you know, this manipulating matter, also, you know, one thing, what, you know, this, what you can say, life is, you know, very, what you can say, frequently we observe. Like, this cow, Maharaj, it converts, you know, taking some, you know, grass and something like that, it converts into milk. And also, Maharaj, you were telling that, you know, tree, you know, just, you know, take some little water and, you know, produces such a huge amount of, you know, this, you know, growth, this matter. Like this, Maharaj, some mystic phenomena, you know, being observed when life is there, you know, in the, you know, body.
An example. One example.
Maharaj,
Prabhupada has also given.
Huh? Maharaj, connection, some problem happened.
Maharaj dropped.
Yes, so. I'm connecting. Purusham Prabhu or Gaurachandra Prabhu is having problem with connecting from Kharagpur.
Purushottam.
Gaurachandra?
Yes.
Maybe he is having some problem. Maybe his connection is slow.
Okay. You are hearing? What? From Skype?
I'm
okay.
Here.
He is hearing through
Google. Just saying
something,
no? Yes. Or, today, Udutraya Prabhu is not there?
He is there. He is there in the ID of Gauranga.
I am here. I can hear you.
He changes his ID frequently. Either Gauranga Premananda or Udutraya.
He takes nearly a form.
So Akshay Prabhu also joined today again. He got up very early. Sunday.
Hare Krishna Purushottam Prabhu, how are you?
I'm still, you know, remembering that Chaturanjaya Tarami chanting. So I'm alright. That early morning, Maharaj taking the class. Everybody chanted something.
What Prabhuji?
At the Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Yes,
I have the explanation of Purushottam.
Oh, you have the explanation?
Yes, this name of the Lord is so significant that the Lord mentions here the results of knowing Him as Purushottam. Purushottam is the best person, superior to all conditioned and liberated living beings, and therefore worshipable by them. Even Sripa Shankaracharya says that the grammatical construction of the name Purushottam, or best among men, should be properly understood, so as not to impose upon the Lord the characteristic of mortality, by classifying him as ordinary man.
Maharaj, our Avadhut Prabhu was telling something about Purushottam, Prabhu's name, Purushottam.
Okay.
He who is endowed with all 64 arts is Purushottam. That was Shiro Vishwana Chakravarti says, the best among the three Purusha avatars.
Oh, your microphone is a little bit, you know, some noise.
Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada has also given one example, Maharaj.
What's that?
Srila Prabhupada says that, Srila Prabhupada says that, sometimes when we are, you know, swimming in the river, and suppose somebody dies, immediately the body sinks. So, this is one example of, you know, the consciousness and the matter. Because when the consciousness is present, one can easily float on the water body. But as soon as the consciousness leaves, or in other words, there is death, then immediately it sinks. So this is a very striking example of the difference between the two types of laws, that is internal and external cause.
Mm-hmm. Yes, as soon as you die, as soon as a person dies, the body no longer stands up against gravity.
Yes, ma'am.
The body will no longer be able to stand up. It will not be able to oppose the gravity. No, that means the body is observing the laws of gravity all the time, and only because the consciousness is there. And then the material laws are contraindicated.
Maharaj, even
not that it's a repulsive force from the gravity. It's a different type of reality. All right, so we're going to answer your question now, Avadhut Prabhu. So, Avadhut, you have seen his question. I think you all can all read what he's saying from the Brahma Samhita. And he wants to know that how can the unlimited fit into the limited? Krishna's form is human-like. And how the unlimited fits in that form? Then this form should be unlimited. Unlimited by form means formless. So although Krishna has a form, Krishna's human-like form, it is not limited. Krishna's form and Krishna himself is unlimited. He is the source of all the unlimited universes and living entities and everything that exists. Then how he can be limited form? So if you read in the Brahma Samhita, that his form is not of ordinary, like a material form. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. His form is made of Satchidananda. Then how is that limited? There's not a material form, Satchidananda. There's no material elements that are made of those three properties. See? His form is not made like that. His form is made of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Now we should not understand his form in an ordinary material form. Compared to the material things of this world, even the unlimited universe of stars and galaxies and the unlimited Vaikuntha planets and so forth and so on, all the expansions and whatever is there in the universe, they are produced potencies of the Lord, whose form is Satchidananda Vigraha. Vigraha means form. Satchidananda. So that Satchidananda is a special kind of quality that makes up Krishna. Special kind of substance that is not really substance, is different from substance. It's a consciousness. It's chit. It's of the nature of chit, of knowledge, consciousness. And not only consciousness, above consciousness, spirit. So that kind of form we can conceive by our material imaginations. That imagination is also part of that higher world from which in which imaginations can exist. Imaginations and all kinds of forms, potencies, energies, everything can exist in that higher form of the Supreme Absolute Truth, who is Satchidananda Vigraha. And who is Ishvara Parama? Who is the controller of them all? Who is producing them all and controlling them all? That is Krishna. So don't try to understand Krishna's form by comparison to some mundane form. That will not help you. You'll never be able to understand like that. And so far as unlimited being formless, that is not correct. Krishna can expand himself in any form. Anyway, he can expand himself into the material energy. He can expand himself into the spiritual energy, the innumerable incarnations, the living entities, whatever. They're all coming. They're all expansions of Krishna or manifestations of Krishna. In his energetic form. And nothing different from Krishna. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Nothing is different from Krishna, so they are all Krishna. And they are, and he, because he can expand in any of those forms, he can also change any of those forms at will. That means that there is no limit to what he can do. Not that there is unlimited doesn't mean that there's no form. Unlimited means that there is nothing that can, any form that can exist, he can create that. Whatever form that you may think of or not think of, Krishna can take those forms, expand himself, manifest himself in other ways. And there's no restriction on what he can do in that regard. And that is what we mean by unlimited. He has no restriction on what forms he can take or not take. So, is it clear?
I will have to think about this, yeah.
Maharaj?
All right.
What's Maharaj, that? Actually, like, you know, Krishna, some echo is coming, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Yes?
Maharaj, somewhere some
echo. I don't know, Prabhu.
Okay, is it, you know, now it's out, Maharaj, okay.
Alright.
Maharaj, actually, you know, like Krishna at will, he can change from this, you know, external, you know, different energy, you know, external energy and internal energy. So he can change, you know, both ways, Maharaj. This energy into that energy and that energy into this energy also. Prabhupada says also that in that Life Comes From Life book, Maharaj.
Yes.
So Maharaj, actually, like, you know, to understand this thing is not possible by, you know, like the thing which is also, you know, understanding is also coming from that place, Maharaj.
Yes.
So
we think that everything has to act in a certain way by necessity.
Yes, Maharaj.
We think, oh, this world is working according to certain rules, and we can't violate those rules. But actually, everything is working according not to to certain rules the way we think they are, but by Krishna's will.
Yes, Maharaj.
It's like someone was saying the other day, I was reading something, they were saying that causality is inviolable in this world. We can't violate causality here. And another was writing that because we think causality is inviolable, we think that everything is occurring by causes, we see only causes, and we don't see miracle. If we allow miracle to be reality, then we can see that everything is happening by some miracle, not by causality. It's all happening by miraculous events, some miraculous force is working in the universe at every minute. And it's not happening by causality at all. Causality is merely the way we want to see things. But if we replace that causality with miracality, if we want to call it something like that, mystical power, mystical energy, then we can see that everything in this world is going by mystical energy. Apparently that's the case. That is the case. If you... when you lift your hand or you move your finger, we think we understand that what's happening is by some electrical impulse in the brain, and the neurons is firing, and they create some tension in the muscle, and the muscle then moves the finger. But really, we don't know that's what's happening. We don't know how that's happening. We simply move the finger, and we want to move the finger, and it moves. How it happens, we don't know. And nobody ever thinks about it when they move their finger. They don't think, how am I going to move this finger now? Then let me figure it out first, then I can move it. No. It just, you want it, and it does it.
Yes, my head.
They want to, just like this, the body gets up from one place and moves to another place. According to the laws of causality, how does that happen? No one can explain. It defies the laws of causality. Living entity actually defies the laws of matter, because laws cannot apply to what is non-material, as I was explaining. The laws are applied only to the material, into what is conducted under the laws of external causality or necessity. Whereas a life, the living entity, he's controlled by the freedom, spontaneity, self-causal phenomena, self-determination, self-determined judgments or will. So we can't find we can't apply law to that region. The region of the spirit is lawless. Lawless means there are no laws there. Maybe there are moral laws, other kinds of laws, but that's not law in a strict sense that we understand it in physics. Gaurachandra. Gaurachandra's not there. No, he's there.
Yes, Maharaj. He just came. You know, his connection is showing some problem. I'm trying to add him.
There is another question that till now I understood that in each paramanu or atom, in each atom the paramatma is there, but there is one purport in Brahma Samhita that actually it is Govinda or Krishna in each paramatma. So how is that? I mean, Krishna is in.
Well, when they say Krishna, they mean Narayan. Krishna can mean anything, huh? Doesn't necessarily mean Swayam Bhagavan. Yes, it's true. Everything is Krishna. Huh?
Govinda.
So we can call Krishna, Govinda, whatever. We can say that we can call everything Krishna or Govinda because he is the source of everything. But when we want to be more specific, then we have to say in the, you know, the Paramatma or the Narayan form, Krishna or Govinda, those are the more general terms, but in the more specific scientific technical sense, we would have to define them by their particular, you know, characteristic, that particular term that describes them as Paramatma or Narayan or whatever, according to their position in the cosmic manifestation and the Paravyom, the spiritual world. I think that's the only difficulty. That's the only, you know, consideration. Otherwise, I have not heard that before, that Govinda is in the atom. Is that what you say? Govinda in the atom or in the heart?
It's in every atom.
In every atom,
it's in
yes.
The Brahma Samhita, I have to find. Yeah.
So that, yes, that means, like I'm saying, in the general and in the specific sense. In the general sense, yes,
and
Krishna
then
is every...
In the general sense,
that's true. Because Krishna is the source of everything, then he must be there, within everything. Not a contradiction. We just have to understand the context in which it's used. Paramatma is also Krishna. It's also an expansion of Krishna. So an expansion, just like we say, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva means Krishna and his potencies, they're non-different. They're different and non-different. So in their non-different forms, that is Krishna. In their different forms, it is Paramatma. Not a contradiction. Is that all right?
Yeah. Maharaj?
What's that?
Yeah.
Maharaj, you were telling that, you know, like this, you know, like one can understand there is a life in atom from, you know, basic understanding, like, you know, like Paramatma is situated in even every atom also. So when there is Paramatma means Atma must be there.
Right.
And Maharaj, and what you can say, this repulsive force, as science don't understand, Maharaj, between the this, you know, matter, there is also a force, a repulsive force exists. So if there is any, you know, what you can say, physical way of viewing into that, you know, somebody can
see. Yes, like I was explaining. If there's no repulsive force, if there's only gravity in the universe, how did matter get spread out all over the universe? Now, they will tell something like a Big Bang. To explain that. They know that matter is spread out all over. They know that the law of gravity is there. Then how did that situation arise? Well, they say that matter was once in one place and then it got exploded. There was some explosion and that matter went flying out from that one place to so many different places. See, so that's merely a, you know, a way of justifying what is there. But they don't know what happened like that. Nobody knows if there was a Big Bang. Huh? It's all theory. Trying to explain what is there. We know the law of gravity exists. We see matter attracting itself to each other. Huh? That's the unifying force of matter. That is there. Okay, we accept that. Now, what caused that matter to be repelled from one another? The logical principle is that there must be a repulsive consideration also. If it is attractive, there must be a repulsive factor involved in matter. That's the logical conclusion. You can't have one thing without the other. For instance, I think I gave this many times before this. If you have a blindness, some of you say blind. In order to say blind, you must be somebody who can see. In order to say night, there must be day. In order to say day, you must have know what night is. But two things are required. The opposites are required to understand any one of those sides. Subject means there must be object. Object means there must be subject. And negative charge means there must be positive to call it negative. Okay? So everything has this kind of, by definition, by logical implication, has its opposite. Also, otherwise we couldn't understand a positive thing. Opposite means opposed means posited. Positive means that you think. And to think one thing, then the other thing must be there also, must be part of the thought. Otherwise, you would not be able to distinguish it as a particular thing. So attraction, by the word of attraction itself, the concept of attraction itself implies the opposite. Because there can't be anything attracting one another unless they're already separated from one another. Then what's the question of attraction if there's no separation? And what is that separation caused by? What is the principle of separation? We have not said. Only to oppose the principle of attraction between two things that are already repelled from one another is to ignore, just simply ignoring the fact that there is also a repulsion involved, or separation involved. You say, it's there. You may talk about it or not talk about it. It doesn't change the fact that it's there, and it's a pre-assumption, presumed, before you even talk about attraction. You can't say there's only attraction. It means you're only half thinking the thing. You're not thinking it all the way through to the bottom. And this is what's going on with the scientists. They think they have understood everything, but they don't think it through to the final actual meaning of the thing.
And Maharaj, actually in what you can say, Vedic understanding, this force of attraction and force of repulsion is also, you know, like, you know, that not that, you know, what the scientists understand at present. Like, universe is being created by, you know, this, what you can say, this Mahavishnu Maharaj. So this, yes. So, you know, this all, you know, what you can say, this Brahma's creation and all this, you know, spreading of, you know, different things. Maharaj, actually this is not what, you know, like the way that, you know, like force of repulsion and attraction, what, you know, they understand. It seems to be a little different from that.
What's the difference?
Maharaj, one more.
Maharaj, like, you know, we call the Sankarsan, and, you know, like that's... like Maharaj.
Yes, but we have, you see, in Mahaprabhu we have union and separation.
Yes, Maharaj.
Not that we only speak about union, Radha and Krishna, that's union. Mm-hmm. But Mahaprabhu is also showing that in Krishna there is separation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have to call it repulsion, we can call it separation. Separation and union.
Yes.
That is there in our philosophy. Why not?
Yes.
That is a very important part of our philosophy, and that is the complete understanding of the absolute truth. If you only include the attraction of Radha and Krishna, then it's not complete.
Yes, Maharaj.
Therefore, Mahaprabhu's teachings are the complete teachings, even more than Radha and Krishna.
Yes, Maharaj.
Because it includes the complete whole. And we don't worship Radha and Krishna only. If you worship Radha and Krishna without Mahaprabhu, then you're not getting the complete absolute truth. You must worship Mahaprabhu and not neglect that.
Yes.
That is as much a part of the absolute truth as the union. The separation is as much a part of the absolute truth as the union of Radha and Krishna.
Yes. Yes.
Because we know that in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, even when they are embracing, they feel separation from one another. That feeling comes in them. So union and separation, that is the fundamental basis of our Vaishnava theology, and that's why it's the highest understanding of God ever presented in the world. Because people don't only understand union, but they can't recognize that there must be the separation also in that union. Otherwise, it's not complete conception. Hare Krishna. Any other?
Maharaj, one thought is coming, Maharaj.
I'm sorry?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Bhava.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Can you hear?
I can hear you.
Yes, Maharaj. Actually, when people of this world, they want to study about the nature of the absolute truth, the tendency is to approach it from the domain of material observation. For example, in matter we are observing, like certain things evolve from some other things. Just like in scriptures it is mentioned that this element earth is coming from water and water comes from air and like that. So we assume that the atmosphere from which everything is manifesting. So, but actually, when the scriptures are describing about the spiritual world, that suppose there are different, and he's playing with he's the cowherd boys and like that. So, the idea comes that how there is distinction there. That means we see that the Krishna is there and then the cowherd boys. So they're two different like that. So it seems that about the spiritual world that we are. That's our idea in the material world. So, for example, in science, when they want to study life, so they are saying, let us study the virus. For example, they found that virus has some properties of matter as well as some property of life, according to their calculations. So, but actually, they don't know what is pure life. And similarly, when it comes to many other understandings, like origin of universe, which is actually spiritual in nature, but they want to approach from matter. So, I think that it seems that for the scientists and for the spiritual dialogue, it seems to be a very fine line, and I think it requires some proper understanding of both the sides. Because actually, many of the scientists already rejected this. For example, some scientists say that which is not objective, that we don't study in science. So they want to reject it outright from that point itself. What is the how to present the science of Krishna consciousness to this kind of can you hear Maharaj?
How to present, you want to know how to present Krishna consciousness from what regard to what, to the scientist's understanding of reality?
Let's take example, Maharaj. According to scriptures, Krishna has a form, and then the devotees also have a form in spiritual world. So, but actually, our intuitive idea would be that everything is included within Krishna, and there is no separate existence. But actually, it's different, and it.
Okay, 1 minute, Prabhu. 1 minute, Prabhu. Your voice is cutting out.
Yes, Maharaj.
I want, Sushant Prabhu, everyone, you, including you, please mute your microphone. I'm also muting my microphone so that we can hear.
Yes, Maharaj.
Purushottama is saying there won't be any interference. Everyone should have their microphone muted until and unless they are going to speak. Okay, Purushottama Prabhu, go ahead. Continue speaking. Go ahead.
Maharaj, actually, I'm saying that when the people want to study about the nature of ultimate reality when they want to approach from the side of this material experience, that means what we observe in material universe, so obviously they are there is a tendency to accept, to you know, understand spiritual reality from material point of view. That means, say for example, like the spiritual reality says that in the spiritual world there is a distinction. That means, suppose there are different planetary systems, there are different, you know, avatars. There are different, you know, so many existences. But it is not. But the scientists, they think that original reality, just like the Big Bang, would be some kind of a singularity or some kind of, you know, non-differentiated entity. So so for example, now let's say in the study of life, they want to approach it by, you know, the study of virus. They say the virus is life as well as non-life. So but actually nobody knows what is the pure life, or similarly what is the pure spiritual absolute reality. It is only accessible to the persons who are in the parampara. But so now when we have, you know, so much knowledge from the coming down from scriptures, so to present it to the people of the world of science who are not having that idea, it requires some, you know, proper thinking, proper, you know,
Hare Krishna. So Purushottam is dropped. You have to add Purushottam Prabhu again.
Yes, ma'am, trying, Maharaj.
Yes, Prabhu. You have a very long question. I don't know what it is you are trying to ask. Anyhow, you can't explain them spiritual from the material's point of view. I think that's what he's trying to ask.
Hare Krishna, Prasthan Prabhu.
Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna, Prasthan Prabhu.
The question is too slow, Maharaj. I think I just says tell him one sentence, Maharaj. Many of the things that we are speaking of the spiritual world are not easily understandable from the material, you know, experience. It's uh-huh. Like
alright, well, that's of course that may be true according to the way the scientists explain things. They want to put everything into some formula, and that is a very very abstract way of trying to understand it. Reality is not so simple as they make it out to be. We are simple people. We are human beings. We have what they call puppy brain, Prabhupada used to say. Puppy brain is a small brain, and we're trying to understand the big creation from that puppy brain. So necessarily we have to
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Hare Krishna. Maharaj connection, some problem happened. Hare Krishna.
My connection was slow, and I think Maharaj connection also a little slow.
Yes.
Slow.
Yes. Just wait for some time. Maharaj connection is having some problem for last few weeks. Gaurachandra Prabhu was trying to send me messages, but he could not connect actually through Skype. Some problem in IIT Kharagpur internet.
Connection is still not established.
Yes. Thank you. some connection problem. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Bo, sorry.
Maharaj, some connection problem.
My connection is difficult.
Purushottam Prabhu's connection is also having some problem, Maharaj. He is also getting dropped frequently.
It's very difficult today. Huh?
Yes.
Keep everybody connected.
Yes, Maharaj.
Anyhow.
Maharaj, you were telling about the poppy brain, Maharaj, in a sign.
Yeah, so we are oversimplifying.
Yes.
The reality that we have to deal with is much more complex than what we can deal with by the scientific oversimplification of it.
Yes.
So just as I was explaining, we want to interpret everything in terms of causality. When the reality may be operating under the principle of Achintya Shakti, what's happening in the world is all Achintya Shakti, all miraculously going on. And we are interpreting it in our own simplified way as happening according to certain laws that we have determined. Not that. That's just Maya. Yeah? Haribo. That may all just be Maya, in other words. What's going on is something else, is something inconceivable, and what we think is going on is something very simple. Very conceivable according to our laws. So this kind of disconnect between the reality and what we think it is, this is called Maya. Huh? We think it to be something that it is not. That's called Maya. We think it to be something very simple according to certain laws, and it is actually very complex according to Achintya Shakti. Huh? Inconceivable energy is causing it all to happen.
Yes.
But we don't want to see that, because then we won't be in control.
Yes.
As soon as we recognize Achintya Shakti, everything is happening by miraculous causes, then we are no longer in control of the situation. And then what? Then how will we live? Then we have to change our whole way of living.
Yes.
So the material energy means I want to be the controller. I want to be in charge. I want to be the dominator. So Krishna arranges Maya for that. You want to think like that? Okay. And he gives that impression. Just like this aerodynamics, I heard, that they're able to put this plane up in the air. How that plane, big plane, tons and tons of metal is flying in the sky, really is a miracle to me. Of course, the aerodynamic engineers, they know how much air has to flow, how much weight it is, and like that, how big the wingspan has to be, that will get that thing up in the air. Anyhow, so by their laws, they've been able to calculate this and actually put that thing in the air. But then we find that if you put those same laws on the bumblebee has a big body and small wings, then how the bumblebee is flying, it is a violation. Violation of the laws of aerodynamics. No engineer would manufacture a bumblebee.
Maharaj, actually, recently I was reading one article on that, and they say that it is flapping more times than it is miraculous that it flaps so many times in a small fraction of time. They tell that, Maharaj.
So no one can understand how these things of nature are actually going on. Then what is the validity of their laws of aerodynamics? If it can apply to a natural phenomenon like a bumblebee, and they're putting it on these jumbo jets, using it for making these jumbo jets fly, then how much is it actually, there are aerodynamic laws that are making the jumbo jets fly, and how much is it something else that is making them fly? Huh? I can't say. The answer is inconclusive.
Yes.
Otherwise, if they were valid, then they should apply in all circumstances. Since they don't apply in all circumstances, we have to say there's some questionable validity about these things. Krishna Prabhu wants to be added.
Maharaj, actually, I had him in Google Doc. He listening. He told that it is very difficult to connect in Skype.
So, anyhow, this is the thing. Oversimplification of science, that cannot so much be applied to the spiritual realm. That's true.
Maharaj, by some equations, we cannot solve the problem of life and death, Maharaj.
Yes. So we need some different understanding of the spiritual. But we can use, the other thing is this, that we must consider. Although the inapplicability of scientific understanding to cognize the spiritual realm, still there is something in us, in our reason, that allows us to have some concept of the spiritual. There is something in us. It's not that we're totally disconnected from that world. There is something in us that allows us. That faith, that recognition, that of our own limitability, our own finiteness, our own doubt. These are the indications that there's something in us that allows us to recognize that there are what is more than what our finite, controlling attitude demands, and that there is. Something in us that allows us to rationally understand that yes, I'm a dependent entity. I'm not independent. I'm dependent, and that I must, if I want to live in harmony with that which is more greater than me, I must surrender myself there. So that kind of intelligence is also in us. It's not that simply we have this obstinate mentality or obstinate intelligence that I must control everything and everything must be under my control and within my understanding. That's one side. But if we become actually intelligent, we realize that is not the proper perspective, that not a complete perspective at least. And it gets us into so much difficulty, so much trouble. So intelligence is there both to take this dominating attitude and also this submissive serving attitude. And when we apply our intelligence in that way toward the submissive side, toward the appreciative side, toward the wondrous side of reality, we also get some satisfaction in that. That also gives some rational satisfaction to us. It appeals that higher reason that we don't always apply to the lower reason, the imperfect reason that puts us in control of everything or seems to put us in control into the calculative stance that we have in science. Non-calculative mood is also justifiable from a rational perspective when we think about things a little bit more deeply than what we are being fed from the scientific culture that we live in. So a devotee's life is like that, very humble and appreciative of Krishna's energy and respecting that and showing some awe and reverence toward that also. And then a deeper level, finding some affection, some intimate connection with that which is greater than us, which seems to be greater than us. There is something higher beyond that greater than, that Aishwarya consciousness. There is also a deeper layer, a deeper level of the Madhurya aspect, the sweeter aspect. That Aishwarya comes in the Vaikuntha realization and the Madhurya comes in the more intimate relationship with Krishna. It is also possible to develop. But we have to gradually go in that direction. That's what our Vaishnava theology is teaching us. Vaishnava philosophy, Vaishnava way of life.
Maharaj, actually here the knowledge comes actually when, one becomes, the approach the path of humility.
Yes. If you want to go in that direction, yes, we must become humble. Don't think yourself the controller of everything. Anyhow, that is our message, the message that the Acharyas have given us, and we try to follow that, and we in that way make progress in our spiritual life. All right, it's getting very late now. I think we should end. I thank you all very much.
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
We are spending so much time, and we had much difficulty today with this internet. And you're still here faithfully listening despite all these difficulties.
Maharaj.
Is your good quality, your tolerance, and your humility and your patience. Very, very nice.
Jai Shri Bhakti Madhupuri Maharaj ki jai.
I hope that you all got some benefit from hearing this.
Maharaj, we're getting great benefit, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. All right. My humble dhanyavads to you all.
Namaste, Maharaj.
Hari Bol, Jai Prabhupada.
Jai Puri.
Gaura Bhakta Vindiki Jai. Hari Bol.
Namaste, Maharaj.
Hari Bol, dhanyavad, sir. Jai, dhanyavad, Sabadur Prabhu. Hari Bol.
Dhanyavad, Maharaj.
Namaste, Maharaj.
Oh, Hari Bol, Jai Prabhu. Dhanyavad. Dhanyavad. Kazal and Purnamrati and Priyangab and Purushottam and Danny. Bhakta Prashad.
Hari Krishna.